And this is part of what we're looking for, because, ladies and gentlemen, we have made some breakthroughs here on AIB Radio. Had with judicial reform is that we not only had television station out of New York City come down and video us, which is Paul and Gloria, which has got the public broadcast channel, but I think it's about channel 37. They come down, they had their technician come down and do record, but we also had international. And we have international viewers that's going to be listening to the recording here. And they are interested on the fact of the foundational documentation that when we come in as the people, when we come in, and we're making claims to our system, to reform our system, which is what we're at, because we don't have a government. We have a corporation. We don't have a cheating government. We got a de facto system that has taken over our lawful government under a corporation and has placed it under international control. And we, the people, are trying to get it back in control, and we're trying to do it through proper channels, proper means that will be recognized. And one of the things that I found on some of these grand juries, like with what RAP did, which was the Restore America with Reagan and Tim Turner and Kennedy side of this thing, is it wasn't being set up by the people. It was only being set up by a few that was making decisions here. And when I talked with John a little bit here today, and I want to go slow with him, walk through some of this information of the Supreme Court's decisions that has been made. Now, he brought some stuff up out of the Constitution, and he's right, because it is in the Constitution. Let me pull it up. I believe it's under Article 1, Section 8, that gets into the ability to constitute tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court. All right, that's in Article 1, Section 8. That is Clause 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Clause 8 of Section 8. So Congress gave the people the ability. These are some of the things that I was looking for in these other groups, for them to sit back and quote different sections that would validate their standing. And that's what's important here, is the validation. If we're claiming something, then we better be able to validate what we're saying. Not just sit down and say, well, because we can, but I also know the Declaration of Independence gives us the right to alter, reform, or abolish any part of our government. That comes back to we the people, and I understand that, our state constitution. These were things that were left out of a lot of the conversations that I've had with some of these other people. And I like what John was telling me, because he was bringing up and he was validating different things. And that's what's important here. Plus, what the grand jury, he's talking about what is different with what they're trying to set up. So I'm going to give John, a chance to talk here on some of this. Steve, you and I have met. You brought John and Gerard into this thing. Give me a little bit of history of what you're doing, who these gentlemen are, how you met with them, and what's going on here. Steve?
Okay. I've been involved in trying to change the political scene from within the political parties for about 6 or 8 years now. And I saw that it was going to be really slow. And I started listening to you, and then I heard about the National Liberty Alliance Common Law Grand Jury, started to study both of them, and I see that they're connected, that we need to help each other out. And that was my main purpose, is getting you two together to work on a plan that we can do together.
Okay. Do you want to go ahead and introduce the two guests that you hooked me up with?
Okay. Well, John Durash is the National Liberty Alliance national coordinator, and Gerard is his assistant up in New York.
Well, actually, Gerard's the coordinator. He's the head of this whole thing as far as trying to focus on that. But in any event. But we work together, and we're heading forward with a plan to save the nation that we have a very solid belief that it can succeed. It's the only viable plan that we're aware of. As soon as we discovered the potential plan and started to develop it, but as soon as we discovered the potential plan by reading United States versus Williams, we just immediately came on board and changed all of our direction and pointers towards this. And it took us a year to get, a little more than a year and 2 months, I think it is 3 months, to get to where we're at. And we have constituted 48 states out of the 50 United States. We do have Alaska and Hawaii already on board. And so we only lack two states. And we've constituted every single county in those 48 states. What we mean by constituted, ultimately, is that we took out, we called the local newspapers in every county. And we took out we notified them of a press release, and that the people were going to come together at a certain place in order to decide to go forward with the showing of the hands of a common law grand jury. And so that's how we constituted and got the approval of the people. Again, we didn't get droves of people, but of course, sometimes a few, sometimes a lot. But as Jefferson said, we have government not by the majority, but by the majority that participates. So we went forward with that. And as we started to move through the courts to try to bring these people to their senses, to allow the people to get back access into their courts, we own them, they don't. We have the authority, we've given them the authority, but we never gave them more authority than we had. They prevented us, and so we started on a series of indictments. We've indicted eight New York State Supreme Court judges, all of which are the executive branch. Every single one of them were responsible to make sure that the law was being obeyed in all the courts in New York. Instead, they participated and encouraged RICO to go out of control. They're operating under RICO. They became part of a conspiracy against the people when they started that, and of course when they prevented the people from entering into their own courts. So we indicted those eight judges and four of the judges that went along with them. We also indicted two clerks who refused to follow the law and be obedient to file the papers. We then moved it over to the federal courts, Northern District here in New York, and we started filing papers up there. We filed a judgment against a federal judge who tried to get in the way of what we were doing. That indictment went through. It's in the process, but we haven't seen it come out the other end yet, and we're going to get ready to do an investigation to see who might be holding that up. We also filed a bill of information, which is similar to that of the mandamus, which puts the judicial process, justices ultimately, on notice that a law is being broken and they need to do something. So we filed a paper and information on sovereign citizens and how they're abusing the people who are trying to just get their rights. They want their rights, and those people are being abused. They're being imprisoned. They're being beaten. I mean, all kinds of things are happening. And they're putting out persons of interest to flyers. That puts their life in danger. Now we filed we moved all of the, and those two, the bill and that indictment went through. We do have the stamped receipt of the time it went through. Now, we also filed another paper, which was moving, we consolidated all of the indictments of the New York judges and the two clerks, total of, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, I think 14. And so we consolidated in one paper, but made 14 different indictments. They're all connected because they're all participating in the same crime. And we moved that into the federal courts. We have not heard back yet on that. And now we have a very explosive paper that we're ready to file, which is a bill of information in the form of a mandamus. Through some recent research, we discovered that the bill that when you do a true bill for the purpose of an information, it becomes a mandamus. So it's an order to the court to do something about a crime or a situation or a problem. And so this was about the out of control judicial process on the state level, which is totally collapsed here in New York, and now on the federal level. That appears that it too may have collapsed, but we're going to find out with this particular bill. And we're sending this bill out to 90 district courts. My numbers may be off on this. I got to get the accurate numbers, but I'm very close. 90 district courts across the United States. We're going to file this bill in every single one of them. Those are the trial courts, and we're going off towards the main district, which would be the chief clerk would get it. And they'd be responsible to file. We'll do a return slip on that, that they got to return a stamped paper for us. We'll do an envelope, a self-addressed stamped envelope. That's how we've been getting back the reports that we've been filing here in the Northern District. So we're going to file that with those courts. It turns out to be 1,836, roughly, federal judges in the district courts. There's a lot more than a magistrate's, but we're not chasing after the magistrates at this point. But there's 1,826, something like that, judges, federal judges. So we're sending them a copy of this true bill that we're filing, and we're also ordering them through this true bill to obey the law and respond and sign the mandamus from them to all courts in New York and all courts in every state around the nation to obey the law, and we list out the laws, and the obedience of this law will bring us into power just by following the process of that mandamus, which they will have to follow then, will bring us into the power to give us a seat in the court under threat of arrest by the sheriff, and if the sheriff won't respond, the marshal will come and arrest the sheriff, and then the undersheriff will do the sheriff's duty. Whatever it takes, those are the orders. And we also are filing it with the 12 appellate courts to put them on notice. Now, we're letting them know that they'll have 7 days to respond. If they don't respond and they remain silent, then they're guilty of fraud on the court. They're guilty of conspiracy. They become partakers with the rest of the indicted individuals, because when a judge gets knowledge, especially in writing, when a judge gets knowledge of a law being broken, then that judge has a duty to respond. And the United States Supreme Court has ruled numerous times that silence when they have a duty to speak or act is fraud. And so they become guilty and partakers. So they got to kind of have to act. And out of 1,826 or whatever it is judges, I'm sure we'll get a few. But to be honest with you, I think this is the one that's going to break their backs. We've been going at this for over a year. They've been watching us grow. We started off with just Dutchess County and a few other counties going forward with this. We had about 15, 20 counties on our first papers. And as papers grew, all of a sudden we have 30 counties. And then all of a sudden we have 62 counties. And then the counties turned into the Unified New York Common Law Grand Jury. And then all of a sudden, Jersey came on board, and Florida came on board, and Pennsylvania came on board, and numerous other states came on board. We had 5 states. Now we're 5 states, unified common law grand juries in every state, which means all the counties are behind them. Now we've moved up, and progressively, for lack of a better word, we've been coming closer and closer. More and more states, more and more counties, till this paper going out is now going to have 48 states on it for a total of 2,990 counties, thereabouts, lacking only about, 140, 150 counties, which we will get them in the next 2 weeks. So that's kind of where we're at. The pressure is on. They've sent out the FBI on us 3 times in the early days. But they left very quickly. They saw no. They saw nothing that they can find was against the law, and they closed their cases immediately, and they haven't bothered us since.
Okay, now let me ask you a question here. When they came out and talked to you,
mm-hmm.
what was the sections that you were giving them that made them turn around and walk off? Because that's significant. So, what did you say to them? What was the
section? Pretty much, they referred to United States versus Williams. Most of the conversations with the FBI was dealt with by other people. We had a guy down in Long Island that dealt with the FBI first. Okay, and they, as a matter of fact, there was four, I think it was four times, but in any event, he dealt with them first. They came on and was trying to be intimidating. Okay, and one of the guys lied. He turned out to be from the court. He wasn't with the FBI at all. But the FBI agent went along with this, and he knew that was a crime because he was then making believe he was someone else, and the FBI let that happen. But in any event, they kind of walked away seeing that this guy's point, and he used particularly United States versus Williams. We did call that FBI agent on. There was three of us got on a phone call, or four of us. We let him know that we're with the common law grand jury out of the particular counties that we were calling from, and that we were performing now an investigation on them because we wanted to know what they were doing and who these other people were. And the guy really, I think, got kind of nervous on that end, and he confessed that there really wasn't an investigation. He didn't get into the details, but we know what happened. You know, the executive judge, second top, well, actually both of them really, but the second top judge of New York State probably called them up and worked with this other guy who was in the court, who may have been, we don't even know who that person was, but he may have been the judge's clerk or something. But they went down together and to do this thing. It turned out that he said, look, we don't have a case open. We're not doing anything. He got very nervous. And as a matter of fact, he actually told us that, you know, whatever you guys are doing, if you need us, you can give me a call. We'll do whatever we can. And that was kind of, small talk after that, and that's the way the conversation went. We had another case where they called up some jurist in New York City, and they wanted to meet with them. And he said, no, we're not going to meet. We're active at the moment, and it's not appropriate. And they went away. There was a third one in Orange County, New York. And again, same thing with they spent maybe 10 minutes in this person's house. And they went through the process talking about the United States versus Williams, so on and so forth. And again, they says, okay, you know, we don't see a case here, and they left. They came to me once, but that was kind of premature early on, and I don't know if necessarily was connected to just this, but it could have been. And I really referred mostly to the paperwork that they were looking at because they were asking me if I was a sovereign citizen. As a matter of fact, all of these people were asked that, but they were prepared for that.
That was their main thrust. They come in, because I believe the courts didn't give them our whole packet.
Right.
They gave them something where we talked about sovereign or sovereign, and they said, oh, these are no sovereign citizens. And so then when we showed them where we used the word sovereign, and that we were quoting Scalia or Jefferson or one of the other forefathers, they were quick to back off. So they actually were operating with false information because they didn't give the FBI, we don't believe, they didn't give them the whole packet which shows our authorities. They cherry-picked something out to try to engage these guys, and that's what they did. And this sovereign citizen thing is a big, big thing because That's a so-called known terrorism group, and when they don't know how to answer you, they would like to label you as a terrorist, a sovereign citizen. We consider sovereign citizens an oxymoron because, you know, just those two words together don't work in today's language. But anyway, I'll yield.
And then we also, a little earlier, well, actually, a little later on, around the same time that the others got the visit, I got maybe a little earlier before that, and this is when we started filing. That's when the feds came out, but they came out prematurely before that. Actually, the Justice Department came out to me, and they came to my home, and I told them, "Don't come to my home no more. And if you want to talk to me, give me a call, and we'll meet somewhere." And so we did. I met him 3 weeks later, and the IRS was involved with this. They were coming out after me, And I dealt with them. We went down. We talked with these people. Gerard, what were they? The Justice Department or the Treasury Department?
Department of Treasury, who is
the Treasury Department,
sort of the enforcement of the IRS, and they claim that one of the reasons that they came out was because you made claims that they were targeting you as a, you know, because that around the time that this was going on is when that whole business of the IRS targeting Tea Party and Patriot groups was coming out.
Right.
And John specifically mentioned that in his court case. As a matter of fact, in his case, the judge even specifically mentioned that. So I think they were sensitive to that. And they claimed that they were coming out to investigate that charge. But in the course of the question, it became clear that they were just investigating him. They really didn't care about.
Yeah, we believe this whole thing was to come out after me. They were trying to kind of silence things up. But we dealt with it in a legal matter. We went into the courts. We brought a case. We made it clear. They came to try to, get me for $127,000. For originally it was about $250,000 or something like that, $260,000. And so they tried to put the arm on me and put me under depression. And he went after my wife and all that stuff. And we went into court. And 2 weeks later, I got apologies from everybody. What we had done, we had discovered that we had discovered some very powerful things, and really focuses in on putting that judge's flesh on the line. That's my personal opinion, because that's what we did in our case. And we didn't concern ourselves with standing. If you're arguing, we didn't realize this at the time, but we weren't looking at standing anyway. We were looking at jurisdiction. That was the big battle. We do know now that standing is irrelevant, because if you're battling standing, you're in the wrong court. When you go into a common law court, you know, if you got blood pumping through your veins, you got standing. You go into an equity court, in this case, they're really chancery courts. You go into those courts, corporations have standing. You don't have standing. So I'm not going to argue standing. I'm going to argue jurisdiction and tell them they ain't got none. And then I'm going to hold their feet to the fire with U.S. codes like 42 and 18 and put the pressure on them and sue everybody involved under conspiracy, all the officers of the court, go after their bonds and their oaths, which they don't have any bonds in New York, but they do have oaths. So we go after the oaths and we put them into the case. And, we put all the pressure in the right place and it happened. So what happened is they just went away. The IRS gave a release of lien. They put out an apology letter. The judge didn't make a ruling until he just recently made one, and his ruling was I'm throwing everything out, which was fine by me. I wasn't going to go poke into the hornet, the hornet's nest. I was happy to just get out of their silly courts. And so we knew we were on to something. Huh?
The other thing worth mentioning is the Treasury Department was very, very, very sensitive to whether or not we were going to put commercial liens, because John had sued all the agents and everything that touched us, and they were very concerned about whether or not he was going to put commercial liens. And basically what John told them is, look, we're going to go through the courts. If I sue them and I lien them, it's going to be a lien that goes through the judge, and I'm going to take it through court. And they were happy with that, because they're looking to protect their own people, and they have a lot of trouble with these commercial liens when they go on getting them off. And I guess if you tell them you're going to pursue it through the court, they feel like they have more control over that stuff. So that was another thing that they kept. Oh, you're going to do liens. You're going to do liens. Remember, they were on that pretty hot day.
Right.
Okay, yeah, because the thing of it is, what I have learned, and this, John, you and I talked about this, goes back to 1996 on that State Justice Institute with Thomas J. Moyer, of what they put out, and they talked about the people back at this time during the common law courts, during the common law grand juries, and bringing all these issues up. And this is why, with what you and I have talked about, get into that Supreme Court case law, that Williams versus the state. Get in and explain a little bit of that to the people of the foundation on this.
Okay, United States versus Williams, a very potent case. First of all, on that particular case, It was a case that's really called, it's not on point, but it's, oh goodness, what's the name of that word I'm looking for, Gerard?
It was dicta. A lot of what he said was
right.
Dicta. The case itself was about the DA withholding exculpatory evidence, and then Scalia took the opportunity, since it was about the grand jury, to really, really lay out what the grand jury was and what its duties were. So go ahead, John. I'll tell you.
Yeah, so dicta. The case was in dicta and not on point. And in dicta, it doesn't have as much power as if it's on point. So if you're arguing a case in court, of course, for those who don't understand that, if you come up with what's on point and they come up with something, you know, opposing that and it's in dicta, the on point normally would overrule that. Depending on also some of the contents, of course, and the context. But nevertheless, it was mostly dicta. But the interesting thing was, even though it was mostly dicta, he was quoting cases that were all on point, and that is the key to this whole thing. And so he gave a tremendous amount of references to different United States Supreme Court cases.
Yeah, he didn't give his opinion. He backed up every one of those lines that Supreme Court rulings. So
right, he repeated what the other courts have said.
That's right.
And then he just said it.
It was all documented, which is very powerful.
Right. And so we looked into this, and as we looked more and more, I mean, Scalia spent a lot of time on this focus of the power of the grand jury, the authority. They're independent of the court system. They're at arm's length, but they should be operating out of the courthouse under the auspices of justice, but not under the control of the judges. And the only connection he said that the judges really had, or anybody really had, with the grand jury was when they were called in to come in to give the oath, and then they'd walk out, and that was it. They were done, because we're all on our own. But in any event, the amount of work that he put into this, it became clear that this is research that he had done at an earlier time. And I really feel he was like a last-ditch effort trying to save the nation. He was throwing the people a lifeline. And some people have picked up on this, but they didn't understand what to do. And you know, trying to do just one county is not enough. You're not going to get any power or clout. I mean, look at that guy down in Florida. You know, he's got a jury. He calls himself a citizen grand jury. He was an ex prosecutor, and he got a grand jury going, and he's pulled a lot of good cases. He's done a lot of good things, so I got to admit that. But in any event, he did indict Obama, and that's a pretty big thing to do. And of course, it's not going to go nowhere, and it didn't. It's not going to go anywhere. You get 3,142 counties, and that's how many counties we have in the United States at last count. You get 3,142 counties, grand juries coming together and indicting Obama. Obama's been indicted, okay? But if you do it from one county, it doesn't happen. We have 62 counties in New York. You bring 62 counties together and you go up to the governor's office, or you go over to the assembly or the Senate, and you read the Riot Act to them, and let them know where they're breaking the law and how they got to straighten up and get rid of all this junk that has nothing to do with the Constitution. And you give them so many days to do it in, 30 days or whatever you think is fair, and they don't do it. They just lost the job because they're all going to be indicted, and that's power, and that's authority. And when you have 62 counties behind you doing it, you got 51 plus one, so you got 62 counties, you do it as a unified common law grand jury, all counties working together, filing in their own counties the same paperwork to do what has to be done, it'll get done. So the clout and the power is in the people. Only the people can save America. No politician can ever do it or will ever do it. They usually become corrupt within the first year anyway. They become convinced of the system. We had a conversation with a congressman that we helped to get into office, Chris, what was his last name, Chris? Whatever his last name.
Gibson.
Chris Gibson. And we fed him a lot of stuff. We gave him, I was surprised he read it. You know, it was a while ago. He started going back and started talking about, you know, he actually read these things. He looked into the 5,000-year leap. He looked into the trial by jury. He looked into, he didn't look into Lysander Spoon. We didn't have that yet. But numerous things, and he was reading. And and he really understood what was going on. But nevertheless, even though he understood, he didn't understand the conspiracy. He didn't understand that our nation has been hijacked by a group of progressives and that they've taken control of our government. There's nothing wrong with our government. It's the people who have robbed them. It's the pirates that have come on board and taken control of it. We need to take it back. So he tells me one last time I saw him, he tells me, John, look, you know, I got insight. We got all these lawyers, and they explain these things to us, and we know exactly what it means. And we told him, that's your problem. You're listening to lawyers, you know, that's the enemy. But he didn't comprehend that, at least not then. Hopefully by now maybe he's woken up. But this is the problem you have. You get these people, you send them into office, and they either become corrupt or they become controlled and convinced because a lawyer said so. This is the law. They're the experts. And so our whole government is controlled by the Bar Association, no matter where you go. We don't get a chance to talk to judges. They send their lawyers to us, literally. When we went after Prudente and we talked directly to her, we told her she had a duty to speak, and instead she spoke through her insulator, her lawyer. They actually have a lawyer right there in the same office with her, that represents these administrative judges. There are 8 of them down in New York City. And you know, that's just think about that. You know, I'm a contractor. I go out on a job site, and I talk with the foreman and say, hey, what's going on here? You know, you screwed this up and this, that, and the other thing. So wait a second. And he pulls his lawyer over, and his lawyer's going to talk to me. He's not going to talk. He's going to talk to me through his lawyer. That's the same thing. These people work for us. And we got to straighten them out. Lawyers got to go. I can't find any place in the Constitution where we gave these people the right to hire all these lawyers and speak to us through lawyers. One of the first order of business is who's paying for all these people, because we certainly aren't. And if you don't find authority in the Constitution to have these lawyers, they're gone. We didn't elect lawyers to write bills, which is who writes bills, by the way, the lawyers. We didn't hire these people to write bills. We went out and we elected people. And so you're supposed to write these bills, your legislators, you know, either the Assembly, the Senate, the Congress, whatever. Okay, those are the people supposed to write the bills. Oh, well, you know, we don't know the law. No, you write the bills to the best you can, and then you take it up to the appellate courts, and you talk to the chief, you know, those judges up there, and you work out the formalities so that it harmonizes with the existing law. But you keep it simple in simple language because it's common law. This does not take brain surgery. Besides that, 90%, and I think I'm being very kind, I'll tell you what, 95-98%, and again, I think I'm being very kind, 98% of what they're doing is unconstitutional. It's illegal. It has never passed. It doesn't mean anything. We don't have to obey it. And if the people understood that and step up and say, we're not going to obey it, you know, it's the Gandhi effect, what are they going to do? Well, and again, when all these courts start shutting down because they got to reveal who they are, you know, the town courts, the village courts, they're all illegal. They have no authority. They're not constitutional. They have no clout. They can't. They don't have the power. All courts not of record do not have the power to arrest, nor do they have the power to fine. Okay, only courts of record has the power to arrest and fine, and that's the court of the people under law. You know, once the people understand this, then we'll take our nation back. So we are training the people. We've developed a website, nationallibertyalliance.org, and people can come up there, and we've got all these courses. We're about ready to launch a regular course that all administrators or potential administrators will need to take. It's free, but anyone can come. They don't have to become administrator to take it. You can come because you're one of the people and you want to know the law and you want to understand how our process really works. So that should be being released very shortly. So anybody can come and sign up for that. But meanwhile, we have pretty much most of those courses up there kind of on their own. We have, you know, Trial by Jury by Lysander Spooner. It's a must read for anybody who wants to understand how these things work. We have the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers. We have all of that in audio and in writing. We also have the 5,000-year leap in audio and in writing up on our website. And we have a tremendous amount of other things up there. You know, we have a couple of constitutional courses. We have video courses. We have Miller up there, Carl Miller. We've got four lectures on common law by Bill Thornton. So we've got a tremendous amount of stuff, and anybody can become educated. and understand this is not difficult stuff, because common law is common sense. It's logic. That's why, you know, lawyers have a problem, because their logic is distorted. But common law is common sense, and all you have to do is read it, and before you know it, it'll be just spilling off your mouth, off your tongue.
Hey, Rod.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that we have a very good mutual friend in Pauling, Joe, and their studios. They've been very kind to us, and we love them very much. I want to just let you know that.
Because I've worked with them. Like I said, they sent Lamont down, you know, and you know he's one of the best that I've worked with. And I tell you what, you know, Paul and Joe has got really a good program of exposing up there, and they've used a lot of my material. So they've used me. They didn't have the video, but they took off my talk show.
Right. And yeah, they've done plenty of videos with us, and have me down to the studio. You know, they did a lot of CDs which we're sending around to the public broadcasting station. So they've been very good to us, very gracious. So, you know, and they need support, because they're running into trouble because they're trying to cut their bandwidth, and they keep pushing their channel out so people can't get on. You know, when they have problems in court, so they go on to the TV and they talk about it, and, you know, there's nothing that judges can stand less than that, because it shines a light onto the case, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they got a lot of trouble. Well, I know you were asking also about U.S. versus Williams, and if you want, there are some highlighted parts in there that you may want to hear about tonight, because everybody's got to just read it themselves, but there's some very powerful statements in there that Scalia made. And I think it bears just running through them if you have time. I don't know how you want to run the show.
Well, yeah, because the thing of it is, you know, we need to go back and prove where the people have the authority to create the grand jury, because I have never found any legislation that we can't, because the grand jury is made up of the people.
Right, and you won't. You will never find
exactly,
that. But you,
that's
you'll
why
find,
I have to read that.
Yeah, yeah, you will find. That. You will find that whatever legislature they put together, usually it's state legislature, but even the Fed puts some stuff together. It really is for the corporate side of them, and I think most of the listeners on this program understand that they have incorporated everything. They've incorporated the United States of America. They've incorporated every state, county, and town and village. I'm sure there's a few exceptions here or there, but basically they've incorporated them. And what they've done is, for instance, they've incorporated Dutchess County, and how they did that, and this is how they did it in every county and every state and so on, is they kind of turned the shingle around. They call it the County of Dutchess, and that's sort of a clue that they're talking about the corporation. It separates the appreciation for those who understand. And then they overlay it right over the true trust, which is the actual government agency. Now, the government agency is still there. The counties are still there. The states are still there. The United States of America is still there. But they have overlaid this darkness, this shadow, which is sort of a shadow government. It's corporatism. And they've taken control, and they've seized a lot of the legislation, and they've created this prison for us that we're all stuck in, so to speak. But we can take their whole house of cards down, because it's a fiction. We give no credibility to them. We just expose them. We don't go in there and say we're the flesh and sons of God and of the soil and all that other stuff. That they laugh about, and they love to hear that anyway, because it's telling them really that we really don't know what we're doing. And we do understand those things, and it is true, but we're not going to bring it in a courtroom. We're going to go in there, we're going to reveal the fraud. We're going to let them know they have jurisdiction. We're going to show them how. We're going to make them defendants, and we'll remove them from the bench, and we'll do all the necessary things we have to do to get their attention. And then that speaks to them. That's when they start to listen, is when you start to do things like that. But again, the government is the true trust, which is the government, is still there. That brick-and-mortar building, that's ours. the Article III courts are the only courts that could be created on the federal level. And they're all Article III courts, no matter how you get it. They got two sides, an equity side and a law side. And when you go into those courts, you need to get your law side. Now, they have been, poisoned very deeply from the Bar Association, starting right from the bar school. And when they get out of bar school, they don't know process and procedure, so they got to go work for other lawyers. So they get another 2 to 4 years with someone's arm around them, showing them the ropes and how it works, so they can thoroughly make them greedy and focused on money, corrupt them completely, and then bring them through the process on how things work and how, look at that common law stuff that's been abrogated a long time ago. It has nothing to do with us. And so they actually really believe this. But until they start seeing the United States Supreme Court cases, and when they do see them at first, it's like a deer caught in the headlights. They're just not getting it. It's not computing. It's irrelevant. It's like when I watched the Twin Towers go down live. The second one I saw live, my wife called me in, and I went and watched it. And I watched the video go with this thing coming down. It just didn't compute. It was too unreal, okay? And it took a little time to get to me. Well, that's kind of what this is like. It doesn't compute, and it takes a while to sink in. But once they see the overabundance of what we have, they start to get nervous. And you see, that's when they start to make a deal, And until then, they're just going to steamroll you, and they think they're untouchable. They truly believe that they are above the law. But we're going to show them different very soon. We've got a lot of judges that is going to learn that very soon. And as many as they want to jump on board, we've got the welcome wagon open for them. That's what they want to do. We'll take them right down with the rest of them.
Well, that's what we're looking at with what we're doing on a private attorney general side. Because when I'm going into D.C., I'm hammering D.C. on their own rules, their own regulations, their own, the definition of legislative law. And the federal agent that we had that came out to the meeting, and Steve was there. And she told the people is that we're sitting on the foundational argument of what I'm doing here, and the way that we're doing it is absolutely correct, because when you use your own statutes against them, you use your own rules and regulations. They created this for their side to function. Mm-hmm. On this. It wasn't designed for us. It was their rules and regulations.
Right.
And that's what we're hammering D.C. on right now. Though this issue in D.C. is getting squirrely up there with them, because they really don't know what to do with me. They don't know how to handle me on what we're doing. Because we're walking in and just hammering and hammering and hammering. And now this new Palmer case that has just transpired, because he was one of the members of Heller and Parker and several other people in D.C. Well, when the Supreme Court ruled on the Heller case, which he was a party of all this, that the D.C. handgun laws were unconstitutional, D.C. never went back in and corrected their status of their law. They kept, basically, they were in contempt of court, because the Supreme Court ruled your laws were unconstitutional, but they kept running them. Well, Palmer, has being a member of this, has brought a civil rights charge. And this last weekend, while we were at the campground, the federal court ruled that the laws, again, were unconstitutional. But D.C. is wanting to come in and say, hey, we need a 90-day stay so we can correct. Well, they can't ex pro facto back anything, and that's what they're trying to do. And this is what is so significant with what you guys are doing, with what I'm doing, is that we are running them under their own regs and regulations of all this stuff, and we're shoving it down their throat, and they really don't know how to handle it. That's the significance of this. So if we've got the grand jury that is knowledgeable in the codes, rules, regulations, statutes, and we're working on the PAG side of getting PAGs up that can come in and know the rules and regulations, to where we can work together on a private attorney general, which would be the prosecutor and the grand jury, let the other side come in and let them justify their actions what authority they have to violate their own procedures and let them explain this to the grand jury. This would be a good opportunity here.
Absolutely. I agree with you on that. We have been approached numerous times over the year to partnership with different groups and do different things, and we've refused them all because we tried to stay as pure as possible, and who am I to try to bring together, you know, the people's business with some other kind of a movement? We couldn't do that. But in the case with what you're doing, we need that service available. We were looking to potentially, in fact, we were considering calling you up to talk to you about it because we knew you were going down that road as a private attorney general. And I believe we heard that you were doing some educating of people in that matter. We do have a couple of people out in California, maybe a few other places, that are capable of being private attorney generals. They've got the experience in the federal courts. They've got experience in the courts. Their litigators are ready, and they're not bar members, and they know the law. And they know both the law. They know the equity, and they know the law side. And they also know the fiction, which is connected to the equity. And so they're very well qualified. And we realize we have to get we've got to get an educational system going for people who want to become private attorney generals. And you got that going. And that's not what we're doing, but it's what you're doing. And we're going to need those services. When we start to indict big cheeses, we clearly are not going to permit a bar attorney to be the prosecutor on that one. We need a private attorney general. And we'd like to call you and other people that we do know. So when we get a chance, we should kind of get a kind of a round table together with a few other people and start discussing a process and a learning thing. You know, we need to get a course going. You know, when we get our course up, you'll go out and take a look and see what we've done. And maybe you can work out a course and we can get some people to help you do the, you know, a lot of the paperwork and pulling things together in order to put it together so people can go online and actually take the course free of charge to become a private attorney general. And then, of course, they'll need some experience in the courtroom. They can come in with someone who does have the experience and work as a individual in the courthouse, in the courtroom for the purpose of prosecuting. And they can learn the process. But we do have to develop them across the nation. I do believe what will happen at some point, and, you know, we could lay this picture out so it's much more obvious, but it'll take a while. But I'll just go to the end results. The bottom line is a lot of lawyers that are bar attorneys, they're going to leave the bar. They already know the process and procedures of the court. They know how to get into a court. They can talk and so they can articulate themselves and so on and so forth. Clearly, they won't be able to win as a bar attorney because they're restricted and they're stuck on statutes. So I can see them leaving in the droves at some point when common law becomes the court of law again. And I could see them boning up on common law, which is common sense, and reading some books on founding fathers and constitutional courses. And come to our site and take the course. We'll help you to become a real lawyer instead of those silly bar attorneys. But I think they will turn over. We'll get a lot of them.
Okay, what we're trying to get set up is we're involved with a international tribunal of retired judges that's coming back into duty because they're tired of the corruption, they're tired of the wrongdoing, and it's basically targeted at the United States. Because the United States is one of the leaders, so I realize England is and the Vatican is, but the United States, D.C., that 10-mile square, this is where the issues are really coming up, and we're pulling international help, an international tribunal on this, and what we are looking at in the first round on the private attorney general side of this thing is what we're talking about. Know the statutes, know their rules, know their job, do the administrative side on these judges, lawyers, bar members, public officials. Do the administrative side. Once we bust them on the administrative side, let them go before a grand jury. Let them justify their actions before a grand jury, And before they get indicted to go to an international tribunal, because like you're saying, we know we're not under a government. We're under a foreign corporation. We're under anything but we the people and for the people. And because
that's true, yes. And I think when they abandon ship, and I do believe if we're successful by God's mercy, and I do believe God's going to be merciful on us as long as we continue towards true justice and bending the knee. But when we get to that point, there's going to be a lot of people abandoning ship. And when they abandon ship, of course, they'll leave the United States. And then it'll be nice to see that there would be an international movement to deal with them no matter where they go. But anybody who will deal with us from our perspective, we'll come together as a unified United States grand jury. As a matter of fact, that's how we're coming into the courts with this next paper. For the first time, they're going to see a brand new seal called the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. We're coming in with that, and we have 48 unified common law state grand juries. So we'll have 40... eight state seals and one unified United States common law grand jury seal. And that's how we're coming into the court. And once we come in that way, then I got to imagine that the other nations, at least friendly nations, would be oblige us and release these people back to us so that they can be brought to justice. So again, you know, we don't have the details of exactly that we can lay them out right now, but we are in the process of writing out a process on how this might work. But the key thing is we're coming in to take control of the local courts, because that's where it's all at. It's all grassroots. It's right down where the rubber meets the road. And the rubber meets the road down in your local courthouse for your county. And when you take back every courthouse in America, then you have just taken back every state. And when you've taken back every state, you have just taken back the United States of America. So it's a very simple process. You work down on the grassroots and you work on the foundation. And once you shore up and fix that foundation, everything above it becomes solid. But we are coming in with grace, and we've told them that. Our last paper makes it clear we're coming in with an olive branch. We're not after your sins. Whatever sins are in your closet, that's your business. It's what you do from now, from this point forward. Because what we're looking to do is to save the Republic, and so we have to be reasonable. But we do also know that these people injured a lot of people. And so when someone comes and makes a complaint of a wrongdoing on how Judge Joe, destroyed their lives or whatever the case may be, well, now we have a wrongdoing, and we now have a duty for that person to restore them, and we're going to have to deal with that.
What I'm looking at here, Gerald and John, is this, is with what we're trying to get started on the international level, once the state county judges, federal judges, once they realize that we are exposing them, that they are under the UN, they are under the International Organization Immunities Act, and even though we're not supposed to know this, if we can start bringing a few of them into the international arena, then the ones that's going to want to abandon ship is going to want to come back in under the Republic side of this thing instead of being charged internationally for war crimes and humanitarian crimes, because they haven't left us any choice. It's because what you guys are doing, technically, with what you guys are doing, paperwork you filed, the sheriff, the U.S. Marshals, should have stepped in and sit down and say, okay, we're going to take this, and there should have been a prosecutor that should have jumped on this for prosecuting these people instead of letting it slide.
Right, but they're all under their control, so.
We had an epiphany of sorts when we went to one of the county courts here. You know, we put paperwork in, filed a number because we decided that we would take a court case and challenge them in their court.
Yeah, we do it under an index number, but without yielding to a judge, we're coming in as we were the tribunal. So,
So we go in and we say, listen, you know, we went in and we put the paperwork in, and 3 days later, the county clerk pulls the paperwork out and sends it back and puts rejected on it. Now, not rejected for any reason, like the wrong form or it wasn't written right, but just plain rejected. And when we went in and questioned her, you know, what are you doing pulling these papers out? That's against U.S. code, you know. She said, well, Prudente said, accept no papers. We said, look, this is a suit. This isn't even a suit.
Well, it's a filing of an index number into the court for a matter of record within the judicial process. So that's what
we've
done.
Let
me make this point, though, so people understand. You see, in order to get a court case going, you have to do two things in New York. First, you file an index number. That opens a file and a case number. But it doesn't have any court action until you file what's called a request from RJI, a request for judicial intervention. And we didn't file the – I don't think we did. We didn't file the request for judicial intervention. We weren't looking for that. We just wanted to use this as a place to file it within the records so it goes on the records so that we'd get it on the record. They don't want it on the record. But now that we've got it in federal courts for everyone to see, we've put their sin out there and it's being seen. And this makes them very nervous because they love the cleanse cases. They love to remove papers. They cleanse cases all the time. I know lots of cases they come in and they just take everything out. And they're very bold about it. They fear nothing because they're so used to running the house as the house of evil. And now we're going to shine lights on that stuff. And it's got them very nervous. And it should.
I did in D.C. because they kept throwing my paperwork out. It was going to the judge. The judge was denying it. So I brought in that Title 28, brought this up. But when I filed the complaint into the court, I also filed it into the administrative office of the court, the Sergeant of Arms of the House and Senate. I filed it into the Provost Marshal. I filed it into the Department of Justice under professional responsibility. So I bring claims in of tampering with my file into this thing. So, yeah, we are hammering them on this. I agree with that. That's what we're doing.
Well, the point I was making is when we went, when I'll cut to the chase. So they pulled our paperwork out, which was a violation of U.S. code. And so we went down to swear a complaint, a sworn affidavit to the sheriff. We said, look, we want this public official arrested. And look, it's no skin off your back. Because we're making the charge. So basically, you know, we're empowering you to go arrest them because we're signing the complaint. And as we talked and stuff, and we showed him the points of law, at first he didn't think we had anything, but as we talked, we showed him what was going on, and we convinced him that the law has been broken. And when this was the chief investigator, it wasn't actually the sheriff, it was one of his top investigators, and he said, listen, he said, I can take this complaint. I can take your sworn affidavit. He said, but you're talking about an elected official. And he says, as far as my office goes, he says, I don't have the subpoena powers to go into her office and get paperwork. That has to be done through the prosecutor. He said, so why don't you take this thing up and go and sit with the prosecutor and see what he thinks about it, because ultimately that's where I'm going with it. So we went up there like dutiful little American people, you know, and we sat with the prosecutor who clearly had already been talking to probably Prudente and those other judges down there, didn't want anything to do with this hot potato, and just kind of kicked it around a little bit and said that there was no statute that she broke that he could enforce under New York State statutes, which was a lie, there's plenty, and he didn't do it. But what that did is it opened up our eyes. Look, at everybody said, oh, the sheriff, he's the last hope, the sheriff this, the sheriff that. Look at, if the sheriff goes up there and arrests any elected official, and then he has to give it to a prosecutor who's maybe not friendly, and the prosecutor says, I'm not prosecuting, and drops it, what do you think is going to happen to that sheriff? You know, he goes up the hill with his sword out, and he turns around, and there's nobody behind him. You know, you're not going to empower these sheriffs or these provost marshals or anybody else in the military or anybody if there's not a movement of people behind them. They're waiting for the people. Because look, if the sheriff goes up there and he does something, maybe he have a statute in New York that a governor can take the sheriff out of office for not following, you know, the law that he puts in and blah, blah, blah. Well, that's all well and good, but the sheriff still has due process rights. It goes in front of the grand jury. If he has a common law grand jury in his county, what do you think that grand jury is going to say when the governor tries to twist his arm into violating our Second Amendment rights? They're going to say not guilty. They're not going to let him come out of office. So the sheriff needs the grand jury as much as the grand jury needs the sheriff. It has to be a team effort. The other thing is how can you have a prosecutor or even a judge for that matter? Because we went after the Board of Elections early on. That's what brought us into this business, because we went in the courts and we realized how corrupt they are, because Look at the parties run the judges. I don't care if they got a 25-year appointment. The parties still twist their arms, and the judges listen to the parties. And who knows who's controlling the parties? The corporations, obviously. But you never. What happens is they will never punch themselves in the eye. You need a private attorney general. You need the people to do it because ultimately, look, they're going to pick juries. They're going to pick juries that are people that are sympathetic to the government. If you read Lysander Spooner, he talks about why you can't have government picking juries because it becomes a puppet jury right away. And so all these things have played hand in hand. What you're doing and what we're doing, it's kind of along the same level. And, you know, we have found those rulings and those writings that empower us to do this. And one of them was U.S. versus Williams. Like I said, if you go in and you read it, there's highlighted sections that really hammer home that this is a thing that rises out of the people, that the other three branches of government have no authority to affect at all or touch. And you look at the first, when we first read it, we didn't sleep all night because we understood how powerful it was. And I don't know what Scalia, you know, this case was done in like 91. He's probably been waiting for us to wake up and come out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that was a lifeline he threw out to the people. He'd done it in 92. Some people did pick up on it. The problem is that they really didn't know what to do. Some people understood the fiction, but they didn't really understand common law. Some people understood a little bit of common law, but they didn't know the court procedure. You know, we were blessed by the mercy of God to have the proper prerequisitional requirements in order to receive this and actually take it to a place where it could have some traction. And we're very close to that traction. I predict at this point that within the next 30 days we'll be in the courts. I think we're at that point. It really is about money at this point. We're trying to get some money up in order to get all these letters out because it's going to cost us $6,000 to do that. But I trust that's going to come this week. I trust the people are going to step up and give us $5, $10, $20, whatever it is, and collectively we'll get that money together. But once we get
this out, we have 3,000 counties. If everybody put $5 in or $2 or whatever, it would pay for that now.
That's right.
So we're not asking a big deal, you know, a big amount of money from one person. But,
plus,
we're going on
a program called Kickstarter, which we'll be putting. We've already developed everything. I think I got the final ties in, and I may be kicking in tomorrow. Kickstarter kicking in tomorrow. But anyway, we'll be kicking it on tomorrow, hopefully. And then we're going to ask everybody to go out there to, you know, the more hits we get on our page, the further to the front of the program it'll come, and the people with the big dollars that give real big dollars, they'll see it. And that's what we got to do. They're going to see the contrast of what we're doing to what all these other people are doing on Kickstarter. They're looking for money to get a record going or to do this or to do that. We're looking for money to save the nation and ultimately the world, because if the United States falls, the rest of the world will fall along with it. It'll go complete anarchy. But we do need the money for that. But I think we're about 30 days away, and maybe less. And so we're diligently working now to get through the how-to videos on for people to get into the courts, how to do this and how to do that. And we're working a network of advisors in order to help the people to go along. And if all the states follow what we're doing here in New York, we'll be the example. Just duplicate it, and we'll work with everyone to duplicate the paperwork and everything. Just duplicate it in your state, and we'll take control of our state within 30 days. And that's the plan. We have to move quickly because if they start, once they realize what's going on, they'll counteract us. And the problem with them is they've got a huge bureaucracy. And just for them to call a meeting and decide what to do and look at everything and then make a decision, I mean, that could be 60 days out or 40 days out. That's why if we do it in 30 days, at that point, then it's too late for them to do anything. So this is sort of the plan and the process. And let me just, you know, if I'm listening to you talking, you're in the courts and the battles you're going through. I just found this just recently, and I don't know if you've seen this one. This is 28 U.S. Code subsection 132. And it's the creation and composition of the district courts. And it says here in A, there shall be in each judicial district a district court, which shall be a court of record. known as the United States District Court for the District. Now, this is very interesting because when you really look at this and the way that the Constitution couched this with the district courts, and then you look at the Supreme Court rulings referring to the District Courts of the United States, and then they coined a name and turned it around and you know, made it a corporation and called it, instead of the District Courts of the United States, they called it the United States District Courts. And yet, lo and behold, this particular code takes the wind out of that entire sail, because now it's a court of record, which makes it a court of law, which makes it an Article III court, which is clear. And a court of record is a judicial tribunal. This is Jones versus Jones. A court of record is a judicial tribunal having attributes and exercises and functions independently of the person of the magistrate designed generally to hold it, and proceeding according to the course of common law, its acts and proceedings being controlled for a perpetual memorial. Okay? And it goes on to say, in another case, the 3 Peter, the judgment of a court of record whose jurisdiction is final is as conclusive on all the world as the judgment of this court would be. It is as conclusive on this court as it is on other courts. And this is the United States Supreme Court speaking. It's as conclusive on this court as it is on other court. It puts the end to the inquiry concerning the facts by deciding it. So no judge, not even Scalia or any of those guys, nobody can overturn the ruling of a court of record. So once the jury speaks or the grand jury speaks, no one can overturn it. It goes forward. Right or wrong, it goes forward. And of course, we pray to be right. But the only way that they can interfere with that is if in the process you violate someone's unalienable rights, then of course they can. That's their duty now to get involved at that point. But of course, we have no intentions of doing that. But, you know, again, we're coming in pretty strong. I don't think they have much they can do. We've heard from insiders. They say, we know you're getting in. We see it's not going to be stopped. This is coming right out of the courts. We have judges that we know are biting the nails. We know judges that aren't sleeping at night, and they better be upset. They better get on board and start doing the right thing, and they'll get the mercy. But in the end, they're going to pay something because they've hurt a lot of people. You know, we heard of a judge recently, or a little while back, shall I say, that was boasting, and he was coming up for retirement, and he's boasting the fact that in his career he has given out 1 million years of jail sentences. That's pretty sick to make a statement like that to begin with. I think that guy needs 1 million years. Unfortunately, he doesn't have enough time to spend it, but we'll give him whatever he's got left, and then we'll send him on to the Lord, and he'll deal with him. But, you know, look, only the people can save America. Anybody in the hearing of this voice right now in this program, look, you got to get on board, become part, work with us, and either get involved to become a private attorney general and become a prosecutor, or get on board and work as an administrator in the common law grand jury, and let's get the job done. Let's save this nation. There's not much time. There's no time to wait. There's no time to do anything but focus in on what can really work. This is it.
Well, you're right. It's going to take the people to stand up. It's going to take the people to know their own rules, statutes, and their job description of these jobs to hold them accountable. Because, you know, I've taught, and you guys said earlier about people coming in with I am and all this other stuff. Well, the only one that I know that could walk in, and he did it with Pharaoh, was Moses.
Right.
He used the word I am. He brought plagues with him. And we haven't been able to do that at this point in time. If we could change the river into blood and bring locusts and take out the firstborn by using the word I am, then we would have a real good standing on this. And
well, it definitely is coming. There's no doubt about it, because look at the principles that we operate by is a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. The word justice in Black's Law Dictionary is synonymous with virtue, and virtue are the principles, brings us to the qualities of God. It's the virtues, the fruits of the Spirit. And we do teach this. We talk about the Lord every time we have a meeting now. We read some Bible verses. We relate to how we can rest into the Lord to keep us and to get us forward. We spoke about Jericho and the walls of Jericho. We spoke about Elisha. Elisha, what an amazing story, you know, with Elisha and how God saved him and his life. And we spoke about many, many miracles. You know, one of the kings, I forget his name, you know, this nation was coming against him, and God said, don't worry about it. I got it all under control. And so they go out to meet this army, and they knew they were going to lose. Only by the grace of God, God said, don't worry about it. So they didn't worry about it, and they went out to meet this army. And as they got to the top of the mountain to go over to engage them in war, they were all dead. God turned them against each other, and they killed themselves because it was different groups of people that came together. And they all died. They were all dead. And the people of God didn't even have to raise the sword. All they have to do is stand up for justice and righteousness. The decision and the way to beat these people is very simple. Bend the knee to the Lord and do the right thing for whatever's in front of you. And right now, this grand jury is in front of you. Right now, this process is in front of you. Just do the right thing. Make the right decision. Operate under the idea and understanding of a sense of honor, a sense of justice, and a sense of mercy. And God will bless us for that. And it's His battle. He's the guy that's got to win it. We don't have to. We just have to do the right thing.
See, that's the process of what we're trying to do on the private attorney general side. When we come in, I'm showing them their errors, their violations, their screw-ups, giving them opportunities to back off, repent, do the right thing on this. Now, and this is what is so significant. And I wasn't trying to, you know, belittle the I am side of this thing.
Right. I understand that, yeah. Yeah, well, that's what God said. You know, who was it that sent me? I am the I am that sent me. Tell him that. So he said, I am sent me. And who's the I am? The I am ultimately is God himself. I am that I am, period. He's eternal. You know, he's the creator. He's the governor of the universe. He's the guy that gave us our liberty. And the other thing about liberty, you know, our founding fathers understood this. They put it right in the preamble of the Constitution. They said the purpose of this Constitution was for, and they listed about five or six different items, and one of them was the blessings of liberty, okay? So they understood liberty wasn't something you can have unless you were blessed with it. And you're not going to be blessed with it unless you bend a knee to it. And that's the most important message we can bring to the people. Because understand this, if the people are not blessed, we're not going to win. And you're not going to be blessed unless you're within the will of God. You will be blessed if you bend the knee to the Lord and do His will. That's all you got to do. Just do the right thing. Be just. Be honest. And do the right thing. And then God will do the rest. Look at, we'll get over the mountain and they'll all be taken out. We don't have to do it. It's God's job.
I'll tell you what. Go ahead and give where your donation stuff is at. So
I appreciate that. Yeah. Yeah, if you go out to, you know, our website, which is nationallibertyalliance.org, and you'll see a blue bar on the top, and right above the blue bar on the right side, you'll see a maroon tab that says Donate Now. And we'd appreciate anything you can donate, of course, and you could do it either by credit card, or you can. We got a mailing address down towards the bottom of the page where you can mail in a check or a money order. And so we'd appreciate anything you can to help us get this this show on the road, so to speak.
Okay. Yeah, because the thing of it is, like I said, with what you guys are coming up with, I agree with, because there are too many out here that is fighting the statutory side, and they're not understanding. This is our defense. This is our means of holding them accountable. These are their rules and regulations that they wrote for their corporation side.
Right.
And this is what we have to understand on our side of the fence, is to be able to push this in and use this for accountability on their side. And this is where we get the grand juries and even get a jury to understand this.
Well, we are developing both. You know, we're not just we're taking over the administration of the jury, period, whether it be a grand jury or a trial jury. Judges and prosecutors don't get a chance to touch them anymore, and prosecutors don't get the chance of trying to make a deal. That's the grand jury's job. it certainly is not the prosecutor's job, and the judge certainly doesn't get to decide anything. That's the trial jury's job, and
yeah.
And that's the bottom line. You know, we have booklets. Matter of fact, I just got them delivered today. We got about 51,000 of them, and these are jurist handbooks. They're for jurists, judges, sheriffs, and bailiffs. And it lays out the real law. It also gives the power of the U.S. codes when it applies to the bureaucrat, and how these people can be brought under control and show them how they're breaking the law, and they better behave and stay within their jurisdictional power. Otherwise, this is what's going to happen to you. You know, 3 years in prison, 20 years in prison, whatever it is that it says there, plus fined. And anybody who's interested in that, because this is a huge tool for us. So this has been in the workings for, goodness, almost a year now, and we finally got them in. And anybody that goes to Liberty meetings and or anything, you know, we always tell the people that are supporting us, you know, get a 5-minute speech, ask for 5 minutes at a Liberty meeting, you know, just go to a Liberty meeting anywhere, and then just request that you can have 5 minutes to address everybody about this project. And bring pamphlets. We've got different flyers. You can make up your own, but we hand out flyers. And then bring these handbooks with you, because you hand these handbooks out. This is the power. You know, I'll tell you what, and I really mean this. If you have this handbook in your hand, and then you have the Constitution, the little handbook of the Constitution, between those two booklets, what you can, the stuff that you can rattle off, you can win any case with that, and you can always win a jurisdiction, and you can bring that judge to his knees.
That sounds good. Okay, I got somebody who wants to ask you guys a question, if you're up for a question.
Sure.
Okay, let me bring it out of North Virginia. Hold on a minute. North Virginia, can you come in? Hold on. For some reason, it's not allowing me to unmute. Let me kick out here a minute and come back in. But the thing is, guys, with what you're doing, like I said, I'm glad to see someone is coming in on the statutory side of this, bringing them in and holding them accountable, because I really believe that is going to be our answer to this issue. Is doing this way, because once they understand, we understand their rules, their regulations, their guidelines, they really don't have no avenue to go. They're going to have to be held accountable to this.
Absolutely. And, you know, National Liberty Alliance, we're just a facilitator. We don't give marching orders. We ask people to follow us because of our knowledge and do what we do, and we'll work with them, and eventually they'll get their wings and fly on their own. And they have to, because they have to take care of the business in their own county, and collectively the counties need to take the business of their state together. But we, as people in the United States, we need to come together as states. But we're just facilitators. We are a true grassroots grassroots, period. We're true grassroots. And we're all about people power. Education is the key, you know, just as Jefferson has told us. Education is the key, and that's how people are going to get this job done, is to become educated. And
Virginia, go ahead. Ask your question.
Okay. Good evening, gentlemen.
How you doing?
Here's my question. I was looking under Title 42, 1983,
yep.
And the last sentence there, it says that it basically says that you can't really bring an action against a judicial officer unless a declaratory decree or judgment has been made. Now, that to me, I could be reading it wrong. That to me is basically saying that before you can sue a judicial officer, you have to first seek the declaratory judgment, which would support your belief.
Well,
that one of your civil rights has been violated by the action of that particular officer.
Yeah, what code number did you say that was?
Excuse me?
What code number was that?
Oh, 4219, Title 42, 1983.
Okay, 1983. Civil action for deprivation of rights, which says every person who, under the color of any statute, ordinance, regulation, custom, or usage of any state or territory or the District of Columbia, subjects or causes to be subjected any citizen of the United States or another person within the jurisdiction thereof to the deprivation of any rights, privileges, or immunities secured by the Constitution and laws shall be liable to the party injured in an action at law, a lawsuit in equity, or other proper proceedings for redress, except that in the action brought against a judicial officer for an act of omission taken in such offices, judicial capacity, injunction relief shall not be granted unless a declaratory agree was violated or declaratory relief was unavailable. For the purpose of this section, any act of Congress applicable exclusively to the District of Columbia shall be considered to be a statute of the District of Columbia. Okay, well, basically what this is saying, ultimately, when they step outside of their authority, okay, if they violate any statute or any person under the statute, ordinance, regulation, custom, or usage of the state, so on and so forth, subject of course to be subject of any citizen, et cetera, but it goes to deprived of your rights, privileges, or immunities. You see, at that point, they don't have immunity themselves anymore. When a judge steps outside of his jurisdiction, anything he does outside of that, he becomes a criminal. He left his jurisdiction, he doesn't have the immunity, number one. Now, and the other thing is remember, statutes are irrelevant in common law, okay? They don't apply. They do apply towards the individuals as far as that are bureaucrats. If they're an elected individual, appointed individual, a bureaucrat, anybody working for the state, well, these statutes apply to them as law, and if they break the rules because they've been given special authorities and they abuse that authority, now this is what's going to happen to you, and that's written up in statutes, and this is what we the people have ordained in the Constitution for our government to do. But the government cannot create any statute that controls the behavior of the people, nor can, for instance, you know, the statute of limitation doesn't exist under common law. Any statute that controls my behavior doesn't exist under common law. I am answerable only to the people, and if I injure somebody, then I got to answer for that. But if I don't injure anybody, I'm good. Now, I don't have to go and get they tried to pull this on us in court numerous times, and they never got away with it. We do not have to get permission to move from one step to another. We go right into the courts. When we start off in a state court, the moment they violate my unalienable rights, we move that right out of that court and take it over to the federal court. Because the state court no longer has the authority over that case, and we're right into under Article 3, which says in Section 2, the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution. So who has the authority? The judicial powers of the United States shall be vested with one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. So you see, we are now moving the court to the federal courts, takes everything out of their hands. We're going after them for constitutional violations, and each one of those worth a minimum $25,000 event for each event, maybe $50,000. It depends on what kind of damage was done to you. And that would be for every officer in that court. So the moment that judge, when we go into a court, we give the warning to the judge, and we do it all the time on paper, and we will do it verbally. You know, we give the warning to that judge, look at, the jurisdiction you're in has no jurisdiction over us. It's time to release us. I'm coming in here speaking from my court of record, and I'm here only by special appearance. I'm not here to give any authority to this court. There is not going to be any, we're not going to plead guilty or innocent or anything. This court is a court not of record, has no authority over us, and if it continues to proceed, well, our court will sue your court, and you will be subject to collateral damage. Now, they can understand that or not.
Okay, now I do understand that, but again, when I read that, I'm reading it as, look, okay, a judicial officer violated one of my civil rights. Now, I'm going to assume before they would even allow me to go after a judge in his private capacity, that I would first have to get a declaratory judgment.
Well, dude, the way you just said it, but the way you just said that, you would have to go get permission because you called it your civil rights that puts you under the 14th Amendment. You see, we don't come under the 14th Amendment because we have unalienable rights that are protected by the Bill of Rights.
Let me interrupt you a minute. Just, all right, first off, let's remember that John and Gerald are operating under the grand jury side of this thing.
That's
okay?
Right. I'm in law, yeah.
Okay, so we ought to be able to go before a grand jury and say, okay, we have an issue with the judge. He is in violation of Article 3, Section 1, good behavior. He failed to follow the Constitution. Now, a grand jury, because see, they're not operating the court. They're operating the grand jury where a complaint is being brought in to them. And that's where this is where the grand jury would make a decision. Is your complaint bona fide on mm-hmm. that? Now, now, on the other hand, with what you're doing in your case up there in Virginia, I have filed into the United States Administrative Court in Washington, D.C. I just got my ruling today, or here the other day, where they relinquished their sovereignty of these people. They said the United States is immune, not the public offices, and the sections that they gave has now put this judge, in my case, and the prosecutor, in fact, all three judges, all three prosecutors, the United States Administrative Court stripped them of their immunity on a tort claim for me to go get a declaratory judgment against them for a civil rights violation.
Right. The fact that they're operating under a corporation, the minute they do that and they go under this corporate charter, they lose their constitutional protections. You're always there.
It's all over. Once they act as a chancery court, and I want to tell you something, and it's quite alarming, but this is a fact. There may be an exception to the rule in a couple of places because I did hear some stories, but other than that, it's rare. Every court, from a town court, village court, state court, county court, United States, there's federal district courts, all of those courts are acting under chancery. They are not acting under law, which is required by the Constitution. For anything over $20, if you're going in there and you're suing, it's over $20. You get a common law. Well, it's always common law, but you get the right to a jury. But even under that, even if you didn't have it over $20, you still have the right to common law in that court, just that the judge makes the decision. And he better do the right thing, because if we see that he's been paid off, we'll indict him. And that's easy to see by the way they rule. But here's the problem you have where you're at, and you got to understand this. The moment you walk into the court, understand this one thing. They do not have a jurisdiction over you. You're in the wrong court. The moment that they start talking statutes, other than statutes that's going to convict them, they've just told you they're in the wrong court. And you have to object to that court. I'm sorry, Your Honor, I object to this whole thing. Can you please tell me what jurisdiction I'm in? Because I'm confused. I know what I wrote. We called for a court of record. Court of record proceeds according to the common law. It's clearly right here in this action, if you could read this, Your Honor. I'm sure you did read this. Didn't you read that? Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, you're talking statutes. You're talking apples, we're talking oranges. Are we in a different court? Are we not in a common law court, Your Honor? You see, he's not going to answer that. And you have to object. And then you got to put it on the record that there's fraud on a court. I object to this whole process and procedure. The judge refuses to answer. He has a duty to speak. And now there's fraud on a court, and I object to this whole process. The fact that you're in that court, other than the purpose of going to trial, okay, shows you that you're in the wrong court. You're not in a common law court. There is no having meetings and all that stuff, wasting people's money for nothing, okay? So what do you do in that court? You give them a warning, and you put it on paper, and you put it in verbally. You said to the judge, look, right now the officers of this court who took an oath, okay, are violating my oath and taking me into a foreign court. This is not my court. I opened a court of record. This is the court I belong in. Now, your court is now susceptible to collateral damage. And I make a federal case out of everything. You're in a parking, you're doing a parking ticket, make a federal case out of it. You're doing a moving violation, make a federal case. A drug charge, do a federal case. Going to the county court or the state Supreme Court, make a federal case out of it. How? It's very simple. It's what the Constitution says. It requires it. The judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States, and it goes on to really reiterate all of the things. The point is, if it arises, if it's a case that arises under the Constitution, and what took place in that courtroom? A conspiracy took place to violate your unalienable rights. They hijacked you from your court, moved you into a foreign court. That's a violation of your unalienable rights. They performed a conspiracy. The judge and all the officers, all the lawyers on the other side, they worked together under a conspiracy in order to entrap you into this process that has nothing to do with you. And so that's a conspiracy. It's $25,000 minimum, or $50,000, for each event, for each officer in that court. You take them, you add them to the defendant's list, and you move it into the federal court. But before you do that, you have to write a writ of error and overturn and rescind that judge's decision, then file the papers and add the defendants onto the list, then move it into the federal courts. And you could do all that in one day. The next day should be the day you should do it. And it's that simple. You've just removed it from there. Now you get into the federal court, he sees what you've done, and you give him the same warning. You take me into a foreign court, I'm going to sue you too, okay? You let them know without threatening them directly. You could do it in your paperwork. You make the points. Excuse me, Your Honor, can you tell me what jurisdiction we're in? Because I'm confused. I know what my papers say. You see, it's always the same thing. And once you put the flesh on the line and you leave that courtroom, because he's not going to make any decisions, he's not going to say nothing, and while you're busy doing your paperwork and you're gone, he's already got that lawyer in the back room saying, you better make a deal with this guy because you're not putting my flesh on the line here. And that's what happened with me in federal court. 2 weeks later, I had apologies from everybody and releases of liens and all that.
Okay. This sounds good, gentlemen. We got a good thing going, but I need to go ahead and cut it off here tonight because this is not a normal night for me to do this. But with what you guys have, this is good information. And I appreciate you guys coming on. And we need to hook this up on a Friday night, if we can hook this up on
Friday. Friday night we're free, and let's talk, in the meantime, let's talk a little bit and see once what we can think out.
Okay, this sounds good. Well, thank you guys for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
With what your information is, like I said, I like the fact that you're coming in on the statutory side, like I'm going on the PAG side, because these are their rules, their regulations, their guidelines. They created them.
Bear in mind, though, we're coming in on the common law side, but we do use the statutes because we created the statutes to control them. So we will use those statutory laws that are constitutional. Anything that is not constitutional is null and void, Marbury versus Madison.
Well, they're going to find out it's not, because that's how they took their job.
You're right.
Okay. You guys have a good night.
All right. God bless everyone. Thanks for having us. Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Yep.
Call recording has been completed.
Okay. I'm still live here in, where are we? We're in our room on National Liberty Alliance. If anybody, we'll spend a few minutes if anybody has any questions or comments concerning tonight's call. So I'll move this from lecture over in. If anybody has a question or a comment, we can spend 10 minutes or so. In order to get into Q&A, all you have to do is hit star 6. Star 6 and then 1. So if anybody has anything. If not, we'll end it here, too. We only have a couple of people on that came in through the free conference calling. Okay, I see a couple of people here, 559-361. Go right ahead. You got the mic.
Yes, John and Gerald, this is a very good show tonight. I'm glad I came in. This is Bill in California. You gave a very good synopsis of the history of National Liberty Alliance, and I would hope that this tape and this session would be memorialized because it's a very good introduction.
It will be posted up tonight. We'll put it up on the line. We will have it. Well, if you go to news and you highlight news, John, you're coming in through. John? John, you're coming in, leading through. John? Anyway, you can go up and just highlight news on nationallibertyalliance.org and come down and you'll see radio interviews. And you click on that, that's where we'll put it. So.
Well, I just wanted to say thank you for the job. Well done.
Thank you. John, let you know, we're still on free conference call. I was simulcasting this, and we have a few people with some questions. So, are you there, Gerard?
Yeah, what's that? You're on free conference call, huh?
Yeah, because I had simulcast this over our...
So people are still on that particular line?
It's been that way. So I will take the next call. We only have a couple of questions, so... 201, go right ahead.
Hi, John, Jason from Jersey.
How you doing, Jason?
Joe, it really, really is uplifting to know we've been doing this for as long, and the victory is coming, and we'll be vindicated, and they'll be vanquished, and with no evilness in our heart, we'll take back without firing a single shot against our uncivil disservants, and putting the right back into the jury and the manufacturing of real peace in this world. So when we have all those things, it will be grand to have, and then have to worry about the fear that our elected officials use against us, and in the depriving of our rights. When the corporation is taken away, we'll be able to again have the right to be free to and serve each other in the best service of our souls. Thank you very much, John.
I appreciate it. All right, anybody else? We're done here with anybody in the queue, so if anybody has a final question or comment before we shut down, it's open. Click in star 6. Gerard, do you have anything final before we shut down? It doesn't look like anybody else has anything anyway.
No, I thought it was pretty good. I think I covered pretty much. Somebody's hollering
here. Yeah, John, go right ahead. You're on a conference call.
I'm sorry, my brother was on the other line. He wanted to ask a question. I got to get him back.
Okay. Yeah, we got a lot of people here. Do you want to do it privately or openly? We just got off of a radio program. Well, it doesn't look like we have any more questions, so let me end this and hang up, and you can call me back, and we'll do it privately. Gerard, if you want to get in, I'll give you a yell.
Okay.
All right, let me say goodnight to everyone. Thanks for coming, and Lord willing, we'll see you in our next meeting. What is today, Wednesday? Tomorrow's Thursday. We have law tomorrow at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here in this room, and we have the Bible on Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, again right here in this room. All right. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming. Let me end this call if my thing works. Here it goes.